Welcome back to another episode of the Shift Drink Podcast. I'm Ed Rudisell, and today we are actually back in Japan. So kind of catching up on some of those episodes I didn't get a chance to do while I was in the country last year. And my absolute favorite bar while I was trekking across the country was in Kyoto on this really beautiful little street called Kiyomachidori in Kyoto. And that place is called Escomotor, I think. I'm really bad at pronouncing French words. But today I have the owner with me, Christoph Rossi. Welcome to the show.
Hey, guys. Thank you for having me. So, yeah, we say l'escamoteur in French, but you did well. You did well.
I struggle. I have several French friends, and I still, it's a beautiful language if you grew up speaking it. Not so beautiful coming from an American.
My boy, Poro Elvis, with us, the king.
I wish everybody could see, beautiful cat he's got. I mean, you look, for someone that woke up 20 minutes ago, you're looking extremely fresh.
Oh, it's a decoy. It's a wolf cat.
It does look like a wolf cat. You know, obviously everybody can hear your heavy Japanese accent. You have an extremely interesting path into the cocktail world. Very different than what a lot of us have done, where we kind of worked in restaurants and bars in the 90s and just kind of became lifers before craft cocktails were really a thing. But you, I mean, obviously you were born in France. How did you get out of France? What was the path that you took? Because it was very circuitous. You ended up in India, and you've been in Japan for a long time. But why, what was the official, I mean, why did you leave in the first place?
Long story. As you said, I think the bar is quite different. Because I had a life, man. I lived my life fully. I left home. I was 16 in France. So I was born in southern France, in Marseille. I love Asia. I was always into Asia. And then I was into martial arts. That took me to spirituality. And then I left home at 16. I met many travelers. I had crazy story. And I wanted to go to India. I listened so many crazy story, and then went to India at 20. I stayed for music. I discovered guitar, and I played the sitar for 15 years. But I stayed in India for 5 years with a master to study the music. Then I had this.
Hold on. you can't gloss over that. So you ended up in India and you studied sitar for how many years?
5 years.
5 years. That's amazing. So it's a very rare opportunity for anybody really to be able to trek to India and study with a master, especially Indian music. It's so complex and rich with all the semitones and I absolutely love Indian classical music. I did not know that you played sitar. That's a very cool win.
It's microtone tuning. It takes, we say in India, it takes three life to play it. One life you listen, one night you practice, one life you practice, one life you play it. It's only, I love music and any jar. For me, it's two jar actually. It's good music and bad music. It resonates, art has to resonate with you.
Yeah, that's a good answer. You know, people often ask me, oh, you only listen to metal, right? I'm like, no, I listen to a lot of different things, but I couldn't tell you what kind, but yes, the kind that resonates, that's a good answer.
No, but art has to make you feel some things. But the things with the Indian classical music is we do have a lot of improvisation and we look for greatness. But it's like a language. You learn your grammar, you learn the system, and then you will speak freely. Yes. But it's not that I have a voice and I can speak, then I will say just shit. I need to say something interesting. And this is devotional music. It's a spiritual music. It's something amazing, but it's only music in the world where you have to learn and study things to understand what is happening. It will resonate. It will touch you. But the more you know about the system, how it works, the cycle, the raga, and the more you will appreciate it, and the more you will see how crazy, how beautiful is this music system. Anyway, it took me 15 years of my life. I play like a monk, man. It was everything for me. And then I had this Japanese girlfriend. She was also learning music in India. I came in Japan for her. I did many different jobs, but I played Indian classical music in temple here. I played concert. My Guruji, my master came two times in Japan to perform with me. And then I had a son. And then he's 15 now. And when he was born, my Guruji was actually here 2 weeks later, and we had a tour together. And then after this, it was really hard for me to practice music because the baby was nearby. And then I stopped music. Man, I could go out of it. It was like, man, a religion. Man, it was hard, but I did it. And then I went back to one of my oldest passion, which is magic. I started.
I know. I love it. And I know you. I just, you know, if you wrote this down on paper and said, okay, I'm going to make a movie about this guy and he's really into magic and he goes to India to play sitar, but then he gets super into cocktails. Like it, people would be like, come on, that's too unbelievable. But, you know, you lived it. And so, yeah, you get into it, man. Yeah, you are a magician. And how did you get into that? I know that's backing up prior to India, but, you know, what was that first kind of, what ignited the passion for magic?
Magic is easy. I'm in school, and my school got a professional magician to come and to perform for everybody, for us, for the kids. Everybody were amazed, but I was like, I want to do this shit. I want to do this. So I got a card from him, but my family was poor. We couldn't afford it, and the guy was far. So I got two books that they are in the bar now. Two, like a box, you know, like the kids, the magic books. But I stick with it. I love it so much. I stick with it, and I keep learning. And then traveling, after when I started to travel, I mean, when I left home and met people, I was playing some card tricks, and then I keep learning from people. And then in India, I was playing magic for kids and people. All the kids were running after me because they knew I would pay them tea and biscuit and do some magic. So I was very popular amongst kids in the street. And so the passion came back in Japan, like, but strongly. And some things was different. The world was different. We had internet. And I was making money. I could afford to buy books. Magic is a very expensive hobby. And you need to have money to be able to afford things and to buy secret and to know the craft. And you need to know the basic things, principle. And then you will find yourself. You need to find your personality in it, to find who I am, what magic is good for me. It's amazing to see how magic is done, how the brain is behind the magic, how clever it is. But you need to perform magic that resonates with you again, that feel you. Then it's natural for you. So, yeah, I was doing things I'm French, so producing wine bottle and like doing things visual, but I am in Japan. So I play with my personality, with my background and things, with who I am. And that took me to the cocktail. We are getting there. We are getting there, guys.
No, I love that. The path is the most interesting part of this.
So I was performing magic here and there for a big company. I played, I performed for Hermes. For Toyota, for brand, and I was making good money. I was making like $1,000 an hour in the end of my short career. But I was the French magician in Japan, so I performed for a diamond company, big things, had a small show, but I was really happy. Time to time, I was performing in places where bartenders were there. Bartending and yoga was two things I thought, like, oh, later in my life, I want to be into this. And it just happened. So I was living in Shiga, working everywhere. But Shiga is like a bit countryside, is close to Kyoto, which is another department. And I was going by bike home. And I couldn't stop to have just one drink or some things because at home, I'm not a beer drinker. I didn't have this, we call in Japanese, otsukare beer. Opening a bottle of wine for myself, nah. So I had a weekend smoke weed here. So I had to get this something. And so I was performing magic every Saturday in the place in Kyoto. If I didn't have a big show, I was there. And bartender were there. So I was friend with everybody, of course, and talking to everybody. And then one day I'm like, oh, what bottle can I buy home and start to do some cocktails? Yeah, one vodka, one thing. And then I started to have 4 and then 5 and then 10, 20. And soon I had like, yeah, a very decent bar just for me. I was the only bartender and the only client, and I was learning all the basic. Oh, this is a martini. I never had a martini. I never went to bar really. Shit happens. One day we are in December. December is the most busy month for a magician in Japan. because we have all this Christmas event, end of the year event, we're normally busy. And as always, I got booked for many shows, for the Carl Lexus company, Christmas dinner show in Tokyo, here and there. But then shit happened. Then everything got canceled. Everything, man. Like, I had zero show in December, and this is the biggest month. January, February is no job, man. Normally, I stock money, and then I go traveling, performing abroad, or work on my new magic, work on my website. But I make money in December, so I can stand like a few months, fine. And then nothing. And I'm like, yo, I can't do this. At this moment, I was 39 years old. My son is growing, and I'm like, I can't do this. Like, I have to find some things. At the time, one of my friends is making a bistro. And somehow I came up with the idea to open a bar, man. And I never work in a bar.
You told me that when I was sitting at your bar top, and it's just wild. And especially that it, you know, it kind of happened a little bit, you know, later. And a little bit later in life, but you were really very early in like kind of the Japanese craft cocktail revival, I would say. But there's definitely, and we've talked about this on previous episodes, if you want to go back and listen to some of my other interviews from Japan, but, you know, there's a kind of a very structured way that's expected of bartenders to go through in Japan, especially if you were a Japanese bartender, where you kind of study with a master or a mentor bartender for many, many, many years. And I think a lot of people would recognize that from like maybe sushi or something like that, but it exists in very much the same way in the bartender world. Did you go through any of that like learning process with master bartenders?
I did, of course. I had to learn the craft before to to do anything. But I had no time, bro. I have a son to feed, and like I was already 39. I have no time. So everything you learn in life is connected. So martial arts helped me to learn quickly. Music. When I went back to magic, I was like really strong. And then it was faster because you know how to learn. Learning, you have tools that you can apply in different fields. So I was very fast. And somehow everything is connected, and especially bartending. Okay, I'm from France, from southern France. I used to use herbs in my cooking. I cook since I'm very young. I told you, I left home, I was 16. I knew already how to cook. I was cooking. And I was experimenting with food because I was poor. And then I lived in India and herbs. No, I'm sorry, spice. So give me one onion, one vegetables, two things, some rice, and then obviously what I have, I will improvise with spice and herbs I have, and I will make different dish. So I was never good to really respect the recipe by cooking, but I was always really creative. I tell you one story that some things I cooked, I think I was like 15. I thought like, let's do some pasta with anise sauce. But instead of doing putting the anise into the sauce, the fresh cream, I thought I will put the anise into the water boiling the pasta. So the anise will be into the pasta. I did it, but I put too much anise, and I had to throw it away and cook again. Because the idea was anise is in the pasta, and then the sauce is just fresh cream with mushrooms, onion, you know, things, but no, I didn't work. But anyway, you see the process, the creativity. And I was 15. So when it came to the cocktail, I was like, yo, I can improvise things, and it's a drink, and like it's fun because we drink, we get high, and like, bro, I want to do this shit. I decided to open a bar. Everybody called me crazy, and then they were worried for me. It's like, yo, buy some things, and yeah, especially in Japan. But I knew I would learn the craft, so I did learn the craft. So while making the bar, the moment I decided to open a bar, and the bar opening is about a year. And I worked 6 months in a bar with a master that I was with him yesterday, called Ace. This dude is from Tokyo. And I came to his bar once. And then the second time I asked him, where can I learn the craft? And he's like, please come join me and I will be happy to have you here. As one of the things is I was making the cocktail at that moment at home, some of the basic, but I've been to one cocktail bar in my life, open a bar. I never really knew shit about bars or about cocktail bars. So I found his place. He does cocktail like any okay bar in Japan. And the dude is really talented. He's really, really talented. And he was really strict with me. So he made a system of point. Every time I was doing some things, he was telling me how good was the drinks and give me points. They're like, nah, 20 points out of 100. So do it again, do it again, do it again. And he was super strict, like, does the staring, he put shit on my arm. No, don't move, like Karate Kid shit. Like, he was really strict to me. The jigger he used has no line in it. I had just by feeling, by eyes, have a feeling of what I put in the jigger, testing things. In Japan, also in any traditional good cocktail bar, we work with seasonal fruits. So every time it's like, okay, we have kaki, we have this. Can you do something? What fruits will work with flavor? What alcohol? So he was a great master. I came to his bar and said, oh, I'm here because I look to learn the craft because I'm opening a bar.
That's what's wow. You're like, hey, can I learn the craft from you? Because I'm already building a bar.
Opening a bar. And he's like, oh, okay. I'm sure. Please work here. Come here. But we've become a really good friend, and he was really strict to me, so he really prepared me. And then while making the bar, I was speaking to another friend in France who I didn't see for more than 10 years. I was traveling but he was bartender here and there. And when he knew that I was opening a bar, I was like, yo, he jumped on it. He always wanted to go to come to Japan. He always had this idea. He loves role playing, like Dungeon and Dragon things. So we go to my concept later, but he loved the concept and things. And he's like, okay. And he jumped on it. And he's my second master on the craft. When I opened the bar, he came like a week, 10 days before the opening of the bar. He stayed with me 8 months working at the bar and teaching me. And he's the guy who told me like being efficient, be fast, prepare the bar, like basic the bar. My first bartender, my first master told me just like the technique of bartending, but he was a Japanese style bar, so really quiet.
And your bar is definitely not that. It's definitely a bit refreshing because yes, you go to a lot of the Japanese bars. It's very, very quiet, very chill, very kind of proper. Everybody's very respectful to one another. Not that they aren't in your place, but I will just give you, my first impressions when we walked into the bar, and it was on my list of places to go because I had like done my research, but it was the one that most of my friends hadn't actually been to. But we were walking down, it's a Kiyomachi Dori, right? And really beautiful street. Like, I mean, it's just like cherry tree lined street. There's a small little canal going down it. It was a beautiful street. And so we started walking. And I saw the sign. I'm, oh, wait, okay, this is the place. This is where we should check it out. So there was a bit of a wait to get in, which is very common there. But we got in, and you walk in, and just not even addressing the magic yet, but like the actual vibe of the space. I know a lot of people say it's kind of like got this steampunk, like apothecary vibe. But to me, what that says is kind of like this Belle Époque, like Paris in 1914 kind of vibe. It feels like a very old-fashioned European bar in the middle of Kyoto.
But the energy is pumping. The things is like, okay, for people who haven't been to the bar, we are on the second floor and there is stairs. And on the stairs, there is no photo, no nothing. It's just light bulb on the stairs. And then you come up, and then the more you come and the more the music is pumping. The bar is in your face. It's so many things in your face, Lenny, and the vibe and the music are going like bam, 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 bam. I told you 15 years of my life for music, and I love music before, and still, of course, it's a big thing in my life. Playlists, no shit, and I have good sound system, and it's like, bam.
I mean, it sounds great, and it's very clear that everybody in there is having a great time. So, in fact, I told your bartender who was working that night, another Frenchman named Viennet, who's no longer with the bar. I got seated in front of him at the bar. Or actually, I take that back. We got seated off to the side. And when two people got up from the bar, they said, would you like to come up to the bar? So we got to move up to the bar very quickly. Just absolutely fell in love with the crowd. Like, everybody was having such a great time. You were off to the side, kind of doing well and preparing some drinks with a very specific flair. But yeah, so my wife usually is like a one cocktail and done, because she gets intoxicated pretty quickly, and she's got the like Asian flush, so she, you know, turns red and gets itchy, and so usually one cocktail and done. And I had told your bartender that when we sat down. So, you know, after a drink or two, he realizes that we were in the industry as well. And so the shots came out. So I'm thinking, well, that's going to be the nail in my coffin now, because she's already pushed it to two drinks. If we start doing shots, she's going to get sick and we're going to have to leave.
So yeah, we'll go, yeah.
We did the shots, you know, and she was pleased. I could see her getting red, but then when she went to the restroom, he leaned over and said, no, there's no alcohol in that one. You know, that was on the house. There's no alcohol. And I just want you to, I want you guys to stay because I'm having fun talking to you. And I was like, oh, this is my place. And in fact, we did, we fell in love, and we were only in Kyoto for a short time, but we went back to your bar every single night. It was just, everybody in there is really having a good time. Now,
I know.
There's another draw to that, and that is, you've already talked about your love of bartending and your craft and learning that craft and how all these things tie together, but we have yet to talk about how the magic ties in to your bar. Run through how you threaded that passion for magic into a cocktail bar. I don't think I've yet seen that done, and when I heard about it, I was just not sure how that was going to execute, because it could be bad. I mean, it really could be bad. It would be very easy to be bad, but it's not.
Yeah. And it's so good because it's real. So everything in the bar is authentic. So when we say, like, all European, the building by itself, where El Escamotor is 100 years old, what I put in the bar is things that I had in my life, all the decoration, like in my life with me, my mom house, or things here, and things I collect all over the world, real antiques. The vibe is everybody working in my bar is people I love, truly. Then everybody working in my bar understands the mission and is about love. So we speak about the concept. The fact that I'm not from this industry, I come up with a different vision of what can be a bar and what I could be a bar. So I made a bar that I wanted to go without knowing anything about bar. So when you come here in this bar, you don't feel like in another place. It's different. You feel it. And then, yes, you're not a client there. Yeah, this is my house and you are my guest. Let's speak about the concept. And then I have to tell you the making of the bar, man. I didn't finish with it, but what a story. Man, what a story. So the concept, man, to me, first things, magic is always has into an act. It should be a beginning, a moment of tension and a release. But into this, we can articulate so many things. We can put so much. Like in a movie. Like you see an horror movie, and like, oh, someone is coming by the window, like, ooh. And then someone opened the door, and it's no one, and bam, in your face. Like this offbeat things, and it's always more. To me, a bar, every bar, everybody has things on one layer, like one things. You go to a bar, you ask a drink, the guy is making a drink, a joke maybe, and then here's your drink, that's good or bad, you pay, thank you, bye-bye. In my bar, what I try to do is having layers. You hear, you sit, and then, oh, shit, oh, this is actually moving, oh, this is, oh, it's always things. So, like, the movie, The Goonies, there is system, like, pulley things, there is things happening, it's like, and bartender, I love theater, we are into a persona, we have the magician heart, so you are in the atelier of a magician. So it's a mix of everything I love, is the music, is the theater, is the connection with people, the spiritual things that you see it or not, but you feel it. If you're open to, if you're open to have a good night, we will give you everything. We will party for you. One thing is important to me, and this was in my spiritual study in India, is I want people coming to my bar to feel alive, because we don't say it enough, but we're all dying. But at that moment, all these travelers and local people, we are here and we should be happy. We are here too. We're born too. I want people to feel alive and to party like there is no tomorrow. And it's a hard job for us, because for us it's every night, man. I was going to open a bar in Miami, and I wrote a booklet for the guys who were going to work in Miami. Never happened because COVID fucking happened. I worked 2 years to gone. Anyway, in the booklet, I wrote it. Every night is a night like big, you know, because is we say in Japan, one encounter, one chance. You never know who you are going to meet, what day he had, what happened in his life before to come to the bar. So the bar is pure genuine love. We try to really, we are in the love business. It's not a cocktail business. Cocktail has to be fucking good, because it's, at the end of the day, is what you pay for.
So the when walking in and getting these drinks, I mean, absolutely the drinks are spot on. And I think that goes without showing. I wouldn't have anybody on this show if I didn't 100% believe in what they do and the product. But I'm glad that you mentioned, you know, the whole experience of it, because I did feel that it was very much like a performance. Not that it was like fake in any way, shape, or form, but that it was just, it was the whole package, right? Like everybody was really on. Everybody was just perfect in their customer service. You know, even from the lady that seated us, Hila, which I still occasionally chat with, and up to the bar backs, the two guys behind the bar. Of course, we stayed with you for a very long time the first night. But it felt very much to me like a performance. Is that part of your magic background kind of and leaking through? And how do you teach the bartenders to have that same passion? You know, they aren't magicians. They haven't done the stage performances.
Okay, so the bar is 9 years old. And through 9 years, I had a few people joining me. And then on the first age of the bar, in the beginning of the bar, our bartender was like, hey, exactly. Oh, I'm not a performer, I'm not a magician. You were a bit shy too. And then Sheena came and she was started to be there. And then Vianney really embraced the things. And now the bar is really famous. So I think it is what it is. In the beginning, I was just trying somehow to establish these things. But now it's really well established. You come and it's famous for that. So, but we don't do show on every cocktail. If you ask a gin tonic, a beer, bro, we don't take 30 minutes to do it. We're efficient. We have Negronis, we have our classic. But in the menu, so we have 40 original cocktails in the menu. It's a big menu.
Crazy. It's so many.
I know. And it's always hard for me to take away things because I'm so good. And there is no filler. That's the point. But in Miami, there is some things, oh, we work so hard to do some really badass cocktail, and I want to keep it. And it's the identity of the bar. So, okay. In the menu, we do have also a part called stage magic, because we have the opening, the stage magic. We have different parts in the menu. But on stage magic is the slight magic, is sleight of hands with cocktails. So few cocktails, we use fire, a bang, a smoke, and people will choose a cocktail in it. And there is a show that goes with it. It's very very short, but my bar is really small. It's 24 meters square.
Yeah, very tiny, yes.
8 seat on the counter, and then everybody standing, we go to 25 people about. Bar become really famous, but it's really, really small. And even it's small, I have people far away from me when I'm bartend, can't talk to everyone. I do like little sign, like sign communication. But when I do the stage magic, people come close to me, and it's a chance for me to meet them, to talk a little bit, but to talk to them. So this is some things I want to speak about the bartending and industry and bartenders. Like, You don't have to be into magic. You don't have to, but to do anything special, but you have to care for the craft and you have to care for people. Be personal, care for people, ask them where they're from, learn about them, be curious about them. If you just do this, it will change everything. And then I have met some of my best friends in my life in the bar, you know, and now I have friends everywhere in the world. So thanks to this. So the magic things is helping me to meet people also. It's an excuse. Magic also for me when I was starting magic was not to impress people, but it was an excuse to have good time, to share good time and to joke with them. And then just to meet, it's just art is about human, is about expressing yourself, but it's, to me, is a spiritual activity. Animals are spiritual about their things. They are connected by nature, by themselves, but we do art. So I think.
And interesting, you said something a moment ago about, you know, we don't often verbalize it, but we're all dying, right? And you're trying to get people to be in that moment. And one thing that I definitely witnessed in the bar with other guests, again, I was there like three consecutive days hanging out with everybody and us as well, is that all of us as adults, magic just kind of breaks down all of our adult bullshit and puts you back into that kind of wonder of and curiosity about the world. You know, you can't explain. And it's almost like you've hacked into the human brain to be able to like open everybody up almost instantaneously. Like you said, not everything on the menu comes with a show. Because yes, some people just want a cocktail and they don't want the attention or whatever. But every time somebody makes a drink, and again, small bar, right? So there's like maximum of what, two bartenders and a bar back there. And that's pretty crowded. But when you're making a drink and it does come with the show, and like maybe a 5 minute or less magic drink, everybody in the bar piles around you. They're all, it is, you're like on a very small stage. Like you said, you're making eye contact. You're having a quick 3 minute chat with practically the whole bar there. And it does, it just immediately puts everybody back into that space of just enjoying the moment for the moment. And it is, it's, I think you've just hacked into something.
I think it's amazing to, that's the real magic, to open up people. That what has come from. I do actually remember you coming to the bar and I see this big dude with a beard and looking like this. And I'm thinking, oh, let's see. And then, bam, we open up too. And that's, I think the magic of the bar is really, we can be ourselves. So speaking about more like psychology, spirituality, or what happened in the bar, I've been in Japan now 24 years. I came in 2000, I was 25, and I'm going to 50 this year. I love Japan, and I can't say I love Japan because I know this country. You cannot say to a lady or a guy, I love you, anyone, if you don't know really them, I think. But it's a feeling also, a love, right? But it's things that hurt me in Japan is from the education. You have to be normal. You have to do like others. And then, but what the fuck is normal? Mm. And I don't, we all freaks, we all, what is fucking normal? We just people, you know, and we all have different color and different things. When you come to my bar and you see my silly head with a hat and doing fucking silly things, then you can just chill and be yourself and just relax. Okay? Same things when I was doing magic, I always started by doing really silly things, you know, and then because people are like, you're not going to trick me. You're not. I'm coming here with no ego. Just I want to have a good time with you. But then you go like, okay. And then bam, shit happens. And then it's show. That was my style. Always offbeat and like very visual things. But the things with magic, you said, together. And I think that's amazing. Music and magic brings people together. And that's so powerful. This is the two art forms that for me are the most powerful. Music makes you cry, brings you back to like memories, lift your feeling up. It's like salt in food. Like, man, it's amazing. And magic destroy you, man. And like, brain doesn't know what to do, what to think. And then brings you like this feeling as a kid where everything is magic. Mom, push a button and the dish is hot. Dad, do this. And then is things on the TV. Is everything is fucking magic. You don't have an idea how the fuck a car is working or plane, the animal, everything is magic. But we forget this. And now, especially in this age, everybody on the phone. You come to my bar and then there is a, oh, welcome. And no, I'm going to like to look at you. And yeah, that's hospitality. And then break the wall, like you're my friend because you are. And there is no wall. People are, especially in Japan, they're not ready for this. They go like, oh, shit. Yeah. But together, that's really the vibe. Yeah.
It's definitely in a culture that values kind of like blending in. And not sticking out too much, you definitely do the opposite of that. Like when you do your kind of tricks in front of everybody. Well, I was at the bar one night as well. I very much noticed you were a heavy part of the community because the word is out there. Obviously, you have a lot of tourists coming through, and you're very close to Gion, where you know everybody in Kyoto will walk over to. But one night. And second or third night I was there, I met a gentleman, I believe named Kosuke from Kinobi Jin. And you guys work very closely, it seemed, with Kinobi. And so they are literally the Kyoto distillery, right? That's what it says on the bottle. You know, how much have you become kind of ingrained in that community in Kyoto? I mean, it's not a small city, but it's not Tokyo.
First, I like to support local. I think we should... Everyone should support locals, and it's for the environment. You don't want to work with things that they travel so far by boat or plane. And local is cheaper, it's better for environment. And then you need to support the local economy and people around you. And it's better because you know, and it makes your things special, right? Because, hey, I'm using that things, it's made here, it's special. So there is a meaning for you to come here, right? This is what we do. So I always like this. I was in the beginning of the development of Kinobi. I'm a really good friend with a Halbat who made it, Alex, and with the two owner of the brand. And now he moved to Pernod Ricard, and now he's a complete anniversary. But I was there in the beginning, and the product is just amazing. And they use local element. Japanese element like the sancho or the yuzu, the shiso, the bamboo. I mean, and it makes natural sense. But I have also wine. I'm French, but I have only wine on the tap, like beer. Mm. And it's also Japanese. It's a local wine. It's made in Tampa. It's also a friend. Actually, I was performing magic for them. Then I become friend. And then when I opened the bar, they said, okay, we can give you the Nama wine, the fresh wine at the bar. So I have this. And I work, yeah, with many products. But as you say, the Kyoto is a small city compared to Tokyo and a small community with bartenders and producers. The scene is really big on beer, craft beer in Kyoto. As I told you, I'm not a beer person and I don't sell beer except I have Sapporo on tap. Mm. We are a cocktail bar. But the scene is pretty big also on beer in Kyoto, yeah.
Yeah, I was just very impressed with the whole setup, you know, and I just can't say enough good things about your bar. I've recommended several people go over there that had been through Japan since then. So you mentioned a failed project in Miami. Is there any plans to do anything beyond Kyoto at this point, or did COVID-19 erase that? Because I know I had big plans in 2019 and 2020, and I lost three of my restaurants. And yeah, like I have no desire to put myself out there on the line like that again. Not saying that I'll never do anything, but you know, it really sucks to work 10 years on a project to see it killed in 3 months. So I mean, luckily you got your project killed before you got, you know, so deep in it. Although you said you did waste a couple of years working on the project. So do you have any plans to do anything outside of Kyoto?
Few things may happen, and because of the COVID and things, I've been talking like for 2 years. I was going to Miami. My friend Cesar in Miami, he was renting the space for 2 years. He was working things, monetary, but we flew in North Carolina to buy antiques. We had the bar, man. I was working in Japan with an architect. We had a system. The idea was so fucking good. It was, we are based in Wynwood, which is my favorite part.
I love Wynwood. Yeah, absolutely. It's like the coolest neighborhood and like covered in the greatest street art on the planet. Yeah, absolutely. I'm sad to hear that this project even existed, because now I know I can't ever go to it.
And my friend Cesar, he's the guy who made Wood Tavern in Wynwood, which is like the bar who opened. He also suffered during the COVID. He had to pass through many things. And we all had to survive. And I'm like, bro, I can't come. And like, I'm sure you have to use the space and I'll do some things. Like, it just happened. And after this, I don't know. I have the energy to start another ask, because I was going to do Escamoteur Miami, opening up bars, helping to open other bars. Yeah, but to open another Escamoteur somewhere, right now, I don't have this in my head and no plan, because if it happened once, these things, it can happen again.
That's exactly right. And I think it's definitely, that doesn't make sense, but I think we'll definitely come across something. And if anything, we saw that nobody can work together to deal with a world emergency like that. It just crosses a lot of infighting. And you know, I was just thinking, you were in Japan, and while this was happening in Miami, I mean, Japan completely closed borders for quite a long time. So if you had gone to Miami to open, if that was even possible at the time, would you have been able to come back?
So I have a green card for Japan, but even with green card, when it was the peak of the like, COVID things, people with the green card couldn't come back to Japan. It was only Japanese passport. No, it was pretty shitty, man. It was so long. We were closed like 4 years almost. Anything's happening anymore. And in Kyoto, it's a long subject, the corona things. But in Kyoto, really few people died, and they were more than 85 years old. And it was, nothing really happened here. But we had to close. It was like prohibition. We couldn't sell alcohol. At one moment, no more alcohol can be served. It's like, is drinking...
Same thing happened in Thailand, yeah. And they extended those for a very long time in Thailand as well, and hurt a lot of bar owners. You know, it's easy to demonize our business. You know, alcohol causes all problems. But yeah, I'm so happy that you made it through. And you had been at it for a very long time. Like you said, almost 10 years now.
I almost lost the bar. It was that close to fuck. But yeah, we could survive. So I wanted to tell you the story of the bar, how I made it. I will make it short, but man, so many things happened. But mainly, you know, I decided to open a bar. I never work in a bar, and I had no money. Any people with money, even if they don't work in a bar, could go and just do it with their money. I had no money. So I thought I would rent the money at the bank. It took me 6 months to find the location. And then I was learning the craft, and then things were coming together. I found a bar to learn the craft, and I found a perfect building. So for 6 months, I was walking in the city, in the place I like, to see if there was any building opening up. I was going to many agencies, looking online for a building, asking everyone. Many was active looking. And then I was going to many companies, and they were showing me only shitty things. What about this place? What about this place? I'm like, no, I can't. And one agency, they were every time saying like, no, we have nothing. No, we have nothing. Why is like nothing? This is opening up every day. But they knew what I wanted to create, and they were not showing me any shitty things. And one day they called me like, we got it. And that's the place. And I knew the building. And I asked the neighbor, like, the building was closed for 5 years. I asked the other shop nearby, who is the landlord? Can I have the phone number? You know, who is it? Nobody answer anything. Like, say, no, we don't know. But then he showed up to the market, and then he was at one of the agency where I was asking. And they asked, Chris, we have it. The landlord said no at first to me. And then they saw me being destroyed. And they asked, no, Chris, we will arrange some things. And then they arranged a meeting with me and the landlord, which never happened in Japan normally. Because if they say no, they don't want any trouble or any, principle, they are not into confrontation. They really normally don't want to see your face. But it happened. See him, I bring a bottle of wine. The guy is having a really famous and successful restaurant in Kyoto nearby the building. And then he said yes, and I cried like a kid for 2 hours. So happy and so relieved that finally I could find a place. I was looking for making this happen, and for the concept, I had to find a building that would fit the concept. And then once you get a space, then you can ask the loan at the bank. Because if you want to open an ice cream shop, but top of the mountain, there is the location, the capacity and everything. So first find a space and then ask the loan at the bank, which I did. But what happened is the landlord said yes, but I didn't have any contract. I didn't get the key. And it takes normally 3 weeks to 1 month to get an answer from the bank. And 1 week later, the agency called me and said, Chris, you need to get the contract done. You need to get the key. People are asking for the building. Get the fucking key. Put the money down. Now, as I told you, I had no money, but means no money. And I had like $20,000 from my aunt in San Diego that lent me money. That I wanted to put that money to the bank and say, hey, I put that myself. Please give me a loan and help me for the rest. But I had to put that money to get the key. Universe bring me that close. Of course, I will get the loan at the bank. So just let's play the ball. Let's follow the universe. I put the money on the table. I get the key. And the place is just empty inside. It's like there's no counter, there's no bar, there's nothing. And there is a video actually on YouTube if people want to see. It's me on the making with my carpenter of the bar. And you will see how it was like completely empty. If you say Escamoto on YouTube, you find it. So I put the money, I get the key, I secure this, I get the place. And then bank called me and said, no, we are sorry, we cannot help you. And then, man, the stress went like to the fucking roof. And then I had people around me telling me, Chris, it's not easy to do a bar, it's not easy to get the money. People being negative, so many stories, so many shit happened. But at that moment, I woke up and went to the toilet, like, true, like, I was on the phone because of the stress, like, puking everywhere, man. I was crying blood. It was fucking hard. And I was just dying on this shit. But I didn't let it go. And I tried everything I could until the Yakuza. I'm like, I'm not going to touch Yakuza things. I'm not going to rent money from them. No, no, no. But finally, a few friends rent me little money. And my carpenter told me, like, okay, you can pay me little by little. They trust me. And then I could open the bar. 2 weeks before the opening, I didn't have the money to pay the fridge. And somehow I could. The air conditioner was a very small air conditioner, like from a normal small bedroom that I put there. And the day of the opening, all my money was $20. I had 2,000 yen. I didn't have enough money to give back change to people.
Wow.
That's my opening. I ran the money. And then after the shift, I could give back the money, the change. And, and I slept 8 months in the bar, believing. And then it took me like 1 year and a half, I could pay back my friends. And 2 years and a half, I finished to pay the carpenter. And then it was my bar, and I keep building. So why I wanted to say the story, first things is, it's a fun story. I mean, it's a story. Two, the message is we must believe in ourselves. When universe is truly pushing you to do something, then just do it. I didn't let it go because I had no choice. Universe, everything inside of me knew I had to do it. It was that strong. So I could endure it. I could pass it. So believe in yourself, believe in your project, and don't let it go. That's the message. That's why I wanted to tell the story. But man, it was hard, yeah.
Yeah, that when the first day I opened my first restaurant, I had convinced myself to calm down until all of the employees started to like cluck in. And then I couldn't, yeah, same, my nerves where I couldn't breathe. I just realized that I don't know how I'm going to pay my bills. And I really don't know how I'm going to pay their bills. You know, I was, yeah, but I mean, you get through it. You know, it's just this whole conversation. And the reason I love to chat with you is because, you know, you've had like three acts in life, right? A lot of people are very lucky to get one solid passion that keeps them energized through their lifetime. And you've had a chance to really have three. My friend and friend of the show, Beach Bumberry, you know, he always says that he's, you know, very lucky to have got a second act in life with Tiki. He was a screenwriter prior to that. And so, yes, you've been in, you know, a magician, you've studied sitar, you've studied spirituality in India. It's just absolutely amazing. And everything you've done is at the top of your game. It's all at the top, right? You've executed everything. It's a lot of work, but you've absolutely deserved the accolades.
Yeah, thank you.
So where can people find you online? Do you have an online presence that people can find you? And where can people find you in Kyoto?
Okay, so we don't have a website yet.
It's only been 10 years. You know, you don't need those things until the 20th year.
Yeah, I have time. I'm thinking about it. So we do have Instagram. So people find us on Instagram, Escamoteur Bar. In Kyoto, if you Google cocktail bar, you normally on Yelp, on Google, we there, you find us. So we are in the center of Kyoto, as you said, in Kiyamachi Street. It's close to Gion, it's the center, is where all the bars and restaurants are. But we are just a bit out of the center. So it's not, it's more quiet. So people find the bar, they look for the bar by chance, but it's just side of the center.
Yeah, absolutely. And if I remember right, that you mentioned the light over the stairs, it's red, right? The light shining down. Yeah. So it was easy for us to spot when we knew the kind of general area we were going. Christoph, this has been absolutely amazing, man. I mean, I know we've been trying to make this happen for a long time. I'm currently, actually, even today, was trying to work out another trip to come see you later this year in October. I'm hoping to be in Tokyo for the 50th anniversary of Trader Vic's. And so if I make it there, I will do the minimum time in Tokyo and then make my way down to Kyoto for sure.
Of course, please.
Thank you so much, Chris. And I'm going to have links to all of the info that we talked about here on the show today. And absolutely, if you're in Kyoto, please, please go visit Chris and his team. Absolutely amazing experience. And for those of you that listen to the show, you know I've been around the world. I've drank at some of the best cocktail bars in the world. And this very much ranks up very close to the top for me. Thank you so much.
Hey, brother. I appreciate it.
Until next time. Cheers.